You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the week since Access Hollywood released the 2005 recording of Donald Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women, nearly a dozen women have accused the Republican presidential candidate of harassment and assault. The reports have also sparked conversations about rape culture and sexual coercion in the media. In a recent New York Times column, How to Be a Man in the Age of Trump, Peggy Orenstein looks at whether Trump has unwittingly inspired a new bipartisan feminism. She is the author of several books, including Cinderella Ate My Daughter and Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. And we invite our listeners to join the conversation. Our number is 212-433-9692. Have Donald Trump's statements about women influenced your vote this election season? Have they inspired any interesting conversations with your friends, children, or coworkers about what it means to be a woman today or a man? Peggy, welcome to our show. Do you think that in light of Trump's behavior throughout this campaign, the comments on the tape genuinely shocked Americans?
That's a good question. I think that they did. I think that, you know, even in this era where we know what the rates of sexual assault on campus are and all, and we're talking about rape culture much more, to hear somebody who is going to be, you know, who is running for the leader of our country speak that way about women, to objectify them like that, to brag about assault, I think that's pretty shocking.
We have a censored clip. Let's listen to it.
And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony everything. She's totally changed her look.
She's your girl's hottest in the purple.
Whoa.
Yes. Whoa. Yes, Donald has scored.
Whoa.
Oh, my man. Wait, you got to look at me when you get out of here.
Like,
that is very
will you give me the thumbs
look
up?
At you. You are a you know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
Trump's comments have sparked a lot of conversation in the media, think pieces, panels, etc. Is this reaction unprecedented?
You know, yes and no. I mean, it's certainly we're having this huge conversation, but my point when I was writing the Times piece about talking to boys in particular about all of this is that we keep having these examples bubbling up in the media, whether it's Trump or Bill Cosby or years ago William Kennedy Smith or, you know, over if you can go back to boys, you know, with boys too, Brock Turner, Steubenville, the Spur Posse in California. Every couple of years we have a case that we say is unprecedented and we wring our hands and we say, you know, what is happening here? And I think that we need to connect the dots between this extreme behavior and what kids learn about sexual engagement from the get-go, which is A, we say very little to them about ethics, and B, what they do learn just kind of from the media and from the internet is that coercion is kind of baked into the process.
What's wrong with dismissing a then 59-year-old man's aggressive sexual comments as locker room talk?
Oh, I think you know. Because it has an influence. Of course words have meaning. If words didn't have, you know, words is how we make or how we make meaning. And when there's silence among the other men on that bus. You know, I wondered what the other men were thinking besides Billy Bush. Were they thinking, go Donald? Were they thinking, oh my gosh, get me out of here? Or were they thinking, if I just put my head down and don't say anything?
Why did Trump's comments and harassment allegations cause you to think about your interviews with male high school students? What were you researching at the time?
You know, I have just started, I published a book in the spring called Girls and Sex, and I've just started working on a companion book about boys. And I had done an interview just a few days before, actually, where I was talking to this wonderful young man, and he was telling me about working at a bike shop in Northern California and how he had, the guys in the shop talked in horribly degrading ways about women all day long, much the way that Trump did. And his response, because he didn't want to participate, he didn't want to condone it, was to just put his head down, do his work, and say nothing. And there was a way that I totally understood that. You know, I mean, it's hard to speak up. And there's also a way that silence is collusion.
There's a particular question one boy asked in his health class comparing baseball to sex.
Yeah, that was one of my, that was from the reporting with my last book. I was sitting in on a sex education class because I really do believe that kids can work these issues out. You know, they have goodwill, they have open hearts. And one of the boys raised his hand and he said, you know that baseball metaphor for sex? In baseball, there's winners and there's losers. So who's the loser supposed to be in sex? And I thought that was such a profound moment because it was just a little insight, but I felt like that boy was going to move forward in his encounters with girls, and whether they were, you know, 5-minute hookups or 50-year relationships, he would see his partner more as a partner and less as an adversary that he was supposed to score against.
Sexual coercion in one form or another is as American, you say, as that baseball metaphor, a metaphor that sees girls' limits as a challenge that boys should overcome.
Exactly. And you see that all the time. And again, you know, there's these extreme examples that bubble up in the media, but it's all the time. I was watching the show Grease, you know, the family-friendly musical. They did a live version of it on Fox, and they were doing that song Summer Nights, you know, that goes wella wella wella, and they the song, the girls sing tell me more, was it love at first sight, and the boys sing tell me more, did she put up a fight? And I just, you know, I thought, what? I'm watching this with my 13-year-old, you know, what? Why is that an unchallenged lyric? You know, it just shows to me, it's like a throwaway, but it shows the way that we think of sex for boys as something that they're supposed to push and push and see girls' limits as a challenge to overcome, and girls are supposed to be kind of the inertia that stops the unstoppable force of the male libido.
Back to that baseball metaphor, getting to first base, second base, third base, or a home run.
Right, exactly. And I would actually submit to you that girls are not the other team. They're actually the field on which the game is played. And there's also that, you know, another thing I mentioned in the article was that Meatloaf song, which was popular when I was a teenager, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, where he has inserted an actual sports narrative, I think from the Mets or the Yankees or something, in the middle of the song, and he's going, you know, whoa, he's going to steal third. Is he going to make it? And, you know, you're just kind of listening to that and going, huh. So that's how we teach young people about sex, and with such poor sex education in our schools, and often silenced by parents, that's pretty much what they learn.
We invited listeners to join the conversation, and we're getting a lot of calls. Megan from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
So it's funny because you asked if Trump's words were really inspiring new thinking, and I think with a lot of women like me, I lead a team, I'm in my early 30s, and I lead a team of women in marketing, many of whom, myself included, have MBAs. I don't think Trump was much of a surprise. In fact, no one really talked about it. But it wasn't until Mrs. Obama's speech around his words really being deeply impactful that a dialogue I didn't even realize kind of existed under the surface for many of us started, and it exploded. So suddenly, over coffee, you know, those old-fashioned water cooler kind of conversations, over coffee, out to drinks, suddenly every woman I know is talking about a story just like the ones you're hearing about with Mr. Trump, where a boss, and they're not typically happening right now in a professional setting, but women, you know, when we were lifeguards or in our early 20s, when we were waiting tables, everyone has a story just like this, and no one was mentioning anything because we all kind of took it for granted that, of course, it happened. And I think this political season has really started to change that concept of whether that's, forget appropriateness, whether that's even something we should just be comfortable being silent about.
What about you?
Yeah, I was a bartender in Georgetown, and the man who owned the bar in his early 40s had a few moments where it was so absurd, where he put his hand up against the wall and kind of pushed me back, half drunk, and had these horrible, like, you know, sloshy come-on statements. And I remember going home and telling my parents at the time, and kind of like you hear with a lot of these women, and they said, we can quit, and you can file a complaint, but then you'll lose your job, and this is an important part of you making money for college. I mean, there are, I think, sacrifices that every woman's kind of made around that question of whether taking a stand is worth both the monetary value that you lose, but also kind of the professional experience. And certainly that story on bartending hasn't affected me now. But everyone seems to have a story like this. I'm hearing them over and over again.
Thanks for calling us, Peggy. Didn't Donald Trump Jr. say that if women can't handle harassment in the workplace, they should teach kindergarten?
You know, I was told something like that when I when I was a young person, something very much like that. And, you know, yeah, if we can't handle illegal behavior, yeah. But, you know, I think that what the caller brought up was really important. And when I was doing the reporting on girls for Girls and Sex, I say in the book that, of course, not all boys, of course, not all men engage in this behavior. That should be obvious. We shouldn't have to even make that claim. However, every single girl I talked to, and I talked to over 70 girls between ages 15 and 20, had already experienced some kind of harassment, some kind of inappropriate grabbing, some kind of assault. And, you know, it is something that is a normal part of women's lives, and I think it's really time that we start talking to young men about this, so that they, because I don't think that most young men want women to go through their lives that way.
I'm speaking with Peggy Orenstein, who has written a number of books, but we are discussing the article that she wrote for the New York Times recently called How to Be a Man in the Age of Trump, and we will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Peggy Orenstein. She wrote an article called How to Be a Man in the Age of Trump for the New York Times. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Dina from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah. About 15 years ago, went to a conference, a real estate conference here in New York, where Donald Trump was the keynote speaker. And I had just opened up my real estate firm. It took me so many years to do that, and you know, real estate's not easy, as we all know, in Manhattan. So after the event, I went over to him, and I brought my program, and I was so excited to meet him. Maybe he'd give me some words of encouragement, being that he was so successful in business. And instead, he just pushed me out of the way. I couldn't believe it. I was, like, devastated. You know, this is someone that we looked up to. And so the whole point is, first of all, I don't think that if I ever – I met Hillary many times, and she's always been very gracious. I don't think Hillary, if she was in a rush to get somewhere, she would push someone out of the way. But I think it's deeper than that. I think he has a problem with competition. And I think that he has a problem with supporting people who might be a threat to his business. Now, I was very young. I mean, my business was very young. But there's something there that's all about him and the people in his life.
So you don't think it would have mattered whether you were a man or a woman?
Oh, if I were a man, he would never would have done it, because a man would have pushed him out of the way. But I think that,
well, I don't know,
you know,
about that.
I think that because I was a woman, you know, that he just doesn't have that respect for the opposite sex. That's my take on it.
Peggy, what do you think?
Well, he says that nobody respects women more than him. Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's made it pretty clear that he doesn't have a lot of respect for women or people of color or immigrants or many other people.
Sheila from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I was assaulted by my gynecologist, and I was able to report it to the police 4 days later in South Orange. And for some reason, the person in charge didn't care, didn't do anything. And I always felt that the reason that it was so impossible for him to do it was because I was a black woman, and the fact that the gynecologist was a white man. And I've tried to go further with the matter, but the doors are always closed. And what surprised me the most is the fact when I posted it on Facebook and shared it with my friends, how some people were, they felt as if I were, acted as if I were tinted, but some people were very nice and very open about it. I'd like to know if, in general, if you feel that black women and white women are, when it comes to assault, are considered differently.
Peggy?
Well, I believe they are by the police. And at the same time, you know, it's very hard for any woman to disclose assault, whether she's disclosing it to school administration, employer, or the police. And that is why there's so few women who do it. The cost is very high for women. You know, they're often not believed. If they are believed, not much happens. We just had this case out here in California at Stanford where a boy was caught in the middle of raping a girl, and he ended up with just 3 months in prison.
We did a segment not long ago in which a number of young black women said that they felt that they were more sexually objectified simply because of race.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. And I think that women of color, whether it's African-American women or Latino women or Asian women, can be exoticized and objectified in a kind of different and sometimes more virulent way than white women.
How do women, as you write, try to make sense of feeling like objects?
Oh, gosh, you know, we spend our whole lives doing that, Leonard. You know, I think it's particularly complicated for young women. One of the things that I found with girls was that self-objectification is kind of sold to them as personal empowerment now, you know, in the age of the selfie culture and in the age of Facebook and all of this. And so it's very confusing for them to try to figure out what's empowering and what's not. I talked to one girl, for instance, who showed me a picture of herself wearing, you know, the little mini skirt and stiletto heels and a crop top going to a party. And she said, "I never feel more liberated than when I wear skimpy clothes." And then 5 minutes later, she said she wouldn't have worn that outfit a year earlier because she was 25 pounds heavier. And she would have felt like some guy at the party would have made some crack about her. And so then we got into this whole discussion of, you know, who gets to decide which body, under what circumstances, and how liberating is it when humiliation, you know, can lurk just around the corner.
Kate from Queens, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? So you were asking your viewers if Trump's statement about women influenced my vote, and the truth is I was always going to vote for Hillary Clinton because he's an authoritarian and a bigot. But what's been really infuriating to me about these recent comments about women is it's being treated like it's a new issue. These have been a matter of the public record, his misogyny and his sexism for decades, and the fact that Republican
Watch out, he's going to sue you, Kate.
Come and get me, Donald. the fact that these Republican leaders are just now acting as if these comments are out of line and that this is new information, when they lined up behind him, when they themselves have built their careers on sexist and anti-women agendas, for me it's just like, it's shocking that, it's especially infuriating that he's being treated like the real menace when he's just a wolf in wolf's clothing, as opposed to these men who are wolves in sheep's clothing. I mean, and I'm saying men generally, but the women as well on that side of the party, I do feel like in the majority of the Republican Party has a profoundly sexist, patriarchal, anti-women agenda, and the fact that he's being treated like some outlier just because he happened to use an expletive while referring to a woman's genitalia on air or on a microphone, for me it's just profoundly hypocritical. Now he's losing, so now they're distancing themselves, but the truth is they're just as bad.
Thank you for calling us, Kate. In defense of the Republican Party, some of the first women elected to Congress were Republicans. The party has always had some prominent women, so it gets more complicated, doesn't it?
Well, it can, but I think that, you know, I also think that harassment and sexual assault are not party specific, you know, and Trump, you know,
yes,
got caught on tape. That was
there have been some Democrats who've
yes,
done some pretty awful things.
I had a line in the article at one point that, you know, all these politicians who are acting so, you know, shocked that this has happened, I would bet that there's a subset of them who, you know, have done something equivalent.
Do you think that men can process Trump's words without putting it into the context of, imagine if he had said that to my daughter, my sister, my wife, etc.?
You know, I would rather, although I understand saying that, I don't think that we should have to do that. They are just, you know, wrong on the face of it. We don't have to say, what if it was your sister? You know, we should say, why did he feel free to say those things? Why have we allowed this to get to this point? How are we raising our young men? I was just talking to somebody yesterday who was actually interviewing me, who said she was driving down the freeway or the turnpike in Massachusetts and with her kids, and she heard this honking, and she turned and there were these guys who, you know, were probably college age, and they were holding up a sign in their window that said, suck my male genitalia C-word. I don't know why they were doing it, just for the heck of it, just to show her and her 13 and 8-year-old kid. And you think, who raised those boys? Why do they think that's okay?
But you write that telling boys don't sexually assault women, or for that matter, don't get a girl pregnant, is an awfully low bar for acceptable behavior.
Yeah, and you know, after working on the book on girls for 3 years, and that work felt so important to me, remains so important, but what I kind of came away with was, we can't have this conversation just among women. And one of the earlier callers was talking about the conversation that this has sparked among her peers, and that is incredibly important conversation. It's a great start, and I think that that's what this moment in time has done, is it has sparked a kind of outpouring among women. But now that has to move to, okay, what does that mean about how we raise our sons? How do we talk to our sons about sexual ethics, about humanizing their partners, about seeing girls as real people, about what's okay in a culture where, you know, they're saturated with imagery that masculinity is about being dominant, being aggressive, being sexually dominant, where they're seeing a lot of porn at early ages, you know, all of these things. We have to really think about how we want to counter those messages.
Jessica from Long Island, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm going to speak directly to this issue. Daughter does a play every year, and every year the new girl in the play is rated on who the new girl in the play is. And she came home this year to tell me that there was going to be no award this year because the young man, a senior, who would have broken the tie, refused to. He said it was...
The call is breaking up. He refused to do what?
He refused to rate any of the girls because he said it was degrading to women.
That's great.
So and I want you to know that I took his mother out to lunch, and I told her the story, and I thanked her.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, that's the thing. There is no more feminist act than raising a great man, right?
On the other hand, some people are better actors than others in plays, whether they're girls or boys.
I think that what she's saying is that they were rating the girl by her appearance.
Oh, their looks. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Is that it, Jessica?
Right. They were rating the girls on their looks. And I think that it's parents have to congratulate other parents, like I tried to do, to say, I can't thank you enough for raising a young man, by the way, who's a freshman at Stanford this year. But thank you very much for raising a young man who very publicly stood up and said, I don't know how long this process has gone on, you know, in this high school, but it ends with me.
Thank you so much for that call.
That kind of gives me chills. That's really beautiful.
We're going to sneak one more call in because we're pretty much out of time. But Ronnie from Irvington, can you make it quick?
Sure. I grew up in a blue-collar neighborhood in Queens, and what we heard from Donald Trump would have been very common, very accepted, and sometimes even encouraged amongst blue-collar neighborhood that I grew up in.
You think this is just a blue-collar thing? Donald Trump is not blue-collar.
I think that it's more a socioeconomic class thing, because through the years and through education, I now live in one of the most affluent bedroom communities of New York City. And the way that we address teaching our children, and the way that if anybody in town that would hear my children or any child speak of women in that manner would have something to say to the child and to the parents, and then you know, report it to the parents. So it's not accepted in the society where I live now. And we all have strive to address, you know, any time that we hear our children, and I'm sure that I'm not the exception. I'm sure that I'm more the rule. I'm sure there are exceptions, but we are mostly the rule, that where we try to teach our children, especially our boys, that it is not acceptable to treat women differently or as inferior or as a sex object.
Peggy?
I think that's fantastic. And I would push back a little on the idea that it's a socioeconomic thing, because the kids that I interview are middle-class, upper-middle-class, college-bound or in-college kids. And as adults, we see these issues coming up in places like Wall Street, in law firms. The callers who are calling in, and the women I imagine are women who grew up in more affluent neighborhoods. So I think that we have to look at this as an across-the-board issue, not only, again, about telling our boys, don't assault, don't get a girl pregnant, don't harass, but also how do we engage positively with our partners in a sexual situation? What is appropriate? What is not appropriate? And those are tricky conversations for us to have as American parents, but I think we have to start breaking through and having them.
And we're seeing it in sports as well. The National mm-hmm. Football League is going through a major crisis these days. Peggy Orenstein is the author of Cinderella Ate My Daughter and also Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. We're talking about an article she wrote recently for the New York Times, How to Be a Man in the Age of Trump. Peggy, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.